Welcome back to In Search of Tarot, a podcast that examines, questions, and reimagines our approach to life and the cards.
Through guest interviews and in-depth discussions, we'll explore and expand the beautiful complexities of spirituality, philosophy, magic, and more.
I'm Nick.
And I'm Angie.
And we're your hosts for this fascinating ride.
Thanks for being here with us.
Hi, everyone. Today, we reach the final episode in our Mexican Mysticism and Cartomancy series, as well as the final episode of Season 5 of In Search of Tarot. And I just want to take a second to offer a huge thank you to a few people. First of all, to all of our amazing Patreon members who sustain this podcast. You keep us commercial free, and you make it possible for us to pay all of the incredible guests that we all get to enjoy week after week. And speaking of those guests, I want to thank all of the amazing people who've spoken with me this season, who've shared their knowledge and their insights, and who've been willing to dive into some really vulnerable and complicated questions. You know, Season 5 was sort of dedicated to a return of a lot of past guests, and it's just amazing to watch this community grow and to get a chance to meet all of the amazing people that this podcast brings into our lives. I just feel so much richer for knowing all of these wonderful, magical, prismatic souls, and it makes me so proud and so excited to share their knowledge with all of you. So thank you to all of those people. And then I also want to shout out my wonderful friend and co-host, Angie Miller, who has spearheaded the research for this second installment of Shuffling Through History, the closing episode of which you're going to hear today, and who just generally makes my life brighter and is an amazing sounding board and friend, and just so grateful for you, Angie. And then finally, of course, I want to thank you, all of you who are listening right now, who have rated the show on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and who've shared this show out with the world. It's been amazing how this show's grown over the years, and that's because all of you listen and share it around, and I'm just so thankful for you. So, you know, this project has really kept me going through some really difficult times the past few years, and I'm just constantly amazed that people even listen, honestly. So thank you so much. So today we are wrapping up our second installment of Shuffling Through History with an incredible special season finale guest interview, but I'm going to let Angie tell you more about them.
Okay, and now on to today's episode of Shuffling Through History, what we know, don't know, and think we know about the tarot. If you've been following along, you'll know that Nick and I have been tackling a series on mysticism in Mexico. If you haven't caught up on that previous episode or those previous episodes, don't sweat it. Just pop back a few and listen to what we've learned so far about cartomancy and folk saints of Mexico. Today, I have the pleasure of chatting with Edgar Fabian Frias. Edgar works in installation, photography, video art, sound, sculpture, printed textiles, gifts, performance, social justice, and community organizing, among other forms. Their art addresses historical legacies and acts of resistance, resiliency, and radical imagination within the context of indigenous futurism, spirituality, play, pedagogy, animism, and queer aesthetics. Edgar has earned multiple degrees in studio art, psychology, mental health counseling, somatic psychotherapy, and an MFA in art practice. Their work has been exhibited internationally, including the Vincent Price Art Museum, the Institute of Contemporary Art San Francisco, Berkeley Art Museum, and more. Their work has also been featured in things like Cosmopolitan, Taschen, Bustle, Los Angeles Times, and Slate, among others. Edgar is a non-binary Wixárika artist. Wixárika, or the Wixoy people, are an indigenous group in Mexico. They hail in and around the area that we know of as today as the state of Nayarit, as well as Jalisco, where my dad is from, Zacatecas, and Durango, as well as living in the southwestern part of the United States. So without further ado, I'm excited to introduce to you Edgar Fabian Frias. Hi, Edgar.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. I'm so happy to be here.
Nick and I were talking about having you here on the podcast. And so I got to acquaint myself with what you do and like all of your videos and your Instagram feed and going through your website. And it was such a, let me say, a colorful one look at your website, and it's like a prism of color and vibrancy. So I'm so looking forward to getting to talk with you today.
Thank you. Yeah, I really appreciate you saying that, Angie. And I love working with color and color magic and medicine. So, yes, so glad to hear that that's something you picked up from my site.
Yes, I love color. I love glamour. So I want to talk to you a little bit about that too, if we have the time. But I want to start with one of the questions that we ask all of our guests here, which is to help us root in your present moment by telling us a little bit about where you are and who you are in this moment.
Yeah, so my name is Edgar Fabian Frias, and I'm currently living in the Bay Area. I have been here now for about 2 years, and I would say I am someone who's in transition. I just graduated from UC Berkeley's MFA program, and I also just opened up a therapy practice too. So I'm someone who is, coming into like the next phase of their life where I'm going to be, for the first time ever, like fully supporting myself with my businesses, with projects that I work on. And it's definitely given me a lot of reflection, and I feel like I'm in a place where I am really thinking about what am I doing, what do I want to focus on? I'm someone who has adamantly not chosen like a career path. I've like really let myself do whatever I want, and I'm going to continue to do that. But I really feel like I'm in a place where I'm wanting to just really get some more clarity, get some more understanding about how it is that I work with time and how it is I work with my practices.
Like on your website, you talk about, which this I love, you said you're a mutant and a conduit. Can you speak a little bit more about that in the way that you walk through the world, but also the way that you create art, the way that you work?
Yeah, mutant for me has felt like a word that allows me to just be as expansive as possible, knowing that I'm going to change and transform. And also to me, it speaks of having like a sacred guidance, something that's evoking or transforming you, something that's inviting you into a certain type of process. And being a conduit, I feel like that also really speaks to the fact that I don't ever work alone. I'm always collaborating, whether that's with other people, with ancestors, with spirits, with animals, with plants. I'm always connecting and collaborating, and I feel like I am a vessel to be, put here to share and to transmit different energies. And so those are two words that I feel like allow me to feel into that expansiveness, knowing that they do have a certain meaning, and also that we can imbue them with different meanings at different times in our lives too.
I love that. That's like, I mean, I admire that personally as a person who's kind of working through not having maybe a traditional job, as you might say, a 9 to 5. I do several different creative pursuits, and I think a lot of us do in the magical community and the artist community too. When you feel like, let me say, when do you feel the most yourself? When you're walking around, like when you're doing your practice, when you're creating art, what does that process look like to you?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question, because I feel like being such a multi disciplinary and multivalent person, it's interesting to kind of think of like, when do I really feel like myself, more like myself, or when do I feel like I'm really stepping into something that feels sacred. I think I would say, like, the first word that comes to mind is like altered states of awareness. Like I live for altered states of awareness, and I feel like I am able to enter them through all the different practices I have, whether it's doing therapy, offering tarot readings, or even like working on a painting or on a video or a performance piece. There are moments where I drop into a different state of awareness, and that to me feels like my most blissful state that I want to stay in as much as I can, but I also need to send emails and work on budgets and other stuff too. So, but I feel like, yeah, being able to really drop into other states of awareness to me feels like what I'm meant to be doing here on planet Earth,
Yeah, doing that 3D stuff, as the New Agers say, you know what I mean? So do you divine? You divine with the tarot, correct?
Yeah, I work with tarot, yeah, and other sorts of divination practices too.
What other sorts of divination do you practice?
Yeah, so I would say I'm pretty expansive when it comes to divination too. I work a lot with obsidian and with water and also with the clouds and with trees and with animal and plant communicators too. And I would say that having an ancestral practice has been something that I've been invited into since I was a young person. I didn't have the language for it when I was younger, but I feel like my ancestors have really tried hard to get my attention since I was a young person. And so I feel like I've come to really understand like how diverse divination practices are throughout the planet, that there are so many ways that people connect to be able to access these realms, you know, everything from using your iPhone as like a black mirror to looking into people's eyes, looking in the mirror. Like there's so many ways that people use divination, sometimes without even knowing. Like I teach classes sometimes on divination and art practice. And the amount of times I've heard people be like, oh, wow, I used to do that as a kid. Like I would spend hours doing that. It just, yeah, it's something that as humans, I feel like we feel called to these types of spaces and practices because they're very like deeply tied to our like humanity, I feel.
I think so too. I think people are doing it naturally all the time. Like I began in dream work. And so I think that that's probably one of the most intuitive playgrounds. And as we get older, we kind of start to believe that there's like a template or some right way of doing it. You know, it's kind of like, I see this in art schools too, all the time, where it's like, this is the technique. And through learning that technique, you kind of lose the raw ability, or there's just, I guess raw would be the best word I can use to describe there. There's just like some newness or some fluidity that you have that you kind of lose through learning that technique sometimes. And I love to encourage people to play as much as possible and not overthink it so much. Especially kind of working with the tarot, as it can kind of have like a set number of rules and correspondences and things like that. So I want to ask you a little bit about archetype as we go forward, and you can speak to all of the realms that you work in psychotherapy and in art as well. But we tend to talk a lot on the podcast here about how folks in the margins don't see themselves represented in archetype. What is your relationship with archetype?
Yeah, I definitely resonate with what you just said around not feeling like you see yourself, or sometimes like trying to find yourself within certain archetypes. Can see archetypes, a word that comes up that I feel is connected to this is the word egregore, which is like a magical word, which really speaks to there being like a thought form that comes to exist. And the more that we as humans direct energy to this thought form, it starts to build power, it starts to build influence. And anything can be an egregore, from like an art project to a certain type of person, right? And I think that's something that I feel like we as humans can really use to inhabit, because as humans we're multi, you know, consciousness, we have multiple selves, we can show up in multiple ways. And sometimes it's really helpful to have a way that we can harness our energy, direct our energy, set an intention, or even just to explore. I love that you brought up the word play. I feel like there are many ways that archetypes give us space to explore or to play or to discover other aspects of ourselves. And I have definitely worked a lot with archetypes. I feel like the tarot is like a really great example of there being different archetypes that really speak to different phases of our lives, or different critical decisions or junctures or moments in our lives where we have to embody or experiment with different aspects of ourselves. And to be able to have someone else's story, I think, is always so helpful. I think that's really the role that archetypes serve. And in a way, I really also think this is why a lot of witches are also artists too, is that witches understand the power of, you know, us creating something and us being able to share a vision or share an intention and then having other people resonate with it or iterate on it, right? I think that those are ways that we're able to expand the vocabulary. And I think going back to what you said earlier, there's so many ways that so many witches don't see themselves in these spaces. And so I think in a sense, like we're starting to embody, inhabit, become those archetypes too, because we're so needed. We, you know, I think as a witch who's pretty public, like I cannot, you know, remember the amount of times it's happened so many times where I've had people tell me like, I'm just so glad that you exist as a person. You're giving me permission to exist too. And like, I think that for myself is also like, I'm trying to be the person that I really wish I had as a young person, because I didn't have that sort of like, you know, guidance and support as a young person. I did not see myself represented in culture.
Mm-hmm. Love that. There's an experience that I had when, I mean, this was maybe only 10 years ago, but there was an occasion where I was organizing an event and I went out to dance. It was kind of my moment to just play for a moment. I went out onto the dance floor and I just let loose. I don't know what I couldn't tell you what I was doing because I don't remember, but it was the next morning that a participant came up to me and they said, I so admire your ability to just let yourself be seen. I mean, and I wasn't doing anything extra. I was just dancing.
You know? Yeah, you were in the moment. Yeah.
Just playing, you know, but it was to them something that gave them the permission. And I think that I think that all the time when I'm doing something a little out of the box, even if it's quite small, like I'm currently wearing like blue eyebrows and, you know, this blush that's like kind of creeping up into my forehead, yeah, a la Grace Jones, but people, they look at you, you know, and maybe sometimes that's in kind of like a, what are you doing type of way. But in other ways, I think that it can be so liberating for other people to see someone being seen and it be safe, and not just safe, but fun, you know? So in the tarot, do you feel like there's a card in particular that you feel exemplifies the way that you take the archetype and queer it or reconstruct the definitions?
Oh, that's such a good question. I feel like I do that with almost all the cards in a sense, but I think one card that really stands out is the Temperance card, which is a card that I like really have grown to love so much. And I feel like that card to me already feels queer. So I feel like you don't have to do very much to it, but I think it's really taken on different meanings for me. I feel like Temperance for me speaks to a larger process in life. And it's not really like there is like an element of balance or an element of being complementary or having a certain way of existing that I think the card wants to speak to. And also, I really feel like it also speaks to how there's a way that emergence is really important, and that, you know, queerness is about emergence and growth and transformation. And it's also about bringing in newness that's inspired by the past, that is connected to our queer and trans ancestors. And so that's a card for me that has taken on now like more of a mutagenic meaning, where it's really about the essence of life and the essence of life wanting to unfold, having a certain purpose or mission, and also wanting to experiment and play and try things out, see what happens. Like I imbue all of that into the Temperance card now, and it's been you know, really a personal process of me wanting to have a different relationship with all of the tarot, because I feel like a lot of, especially folks who don't see themselves represented within the traditional tarot story or the traditional tarot archetypes, I really feel like it's so important for us as people to reclaim, to transform, to re-imbue our own sense of self and our cultures too into these archetypes.
I love that. Yes, totally. I think that a word that comes to mind when I hear the Temperance card is like an alchemizing, or because there's chemistry and sparks and change that are happening, and a willingness to experiment, right? A curiosity. Yeah. I love that. Thank you for sharing. Would you speak to perhaps some of the challenges you face being a queer individual and an Indigenous person within the Mexican diaspora?
Yeah, this is a big question. I feel like there's a lot here. So where do I start? which parts? I feel like I think, you know, maybe just starting off with what we were sharing earlier around not feeling represented or seen and feeling lost because of that. I feel like I grew up in a non-traditional household. I did not grow up, you know, like a lot of folks who are from Mexico, maybe are seen as growing up. I grew up as a Jehovah's Witness. So I grew up in a pretty like conservative Christian household. And, you know, my family, we went to Bible study. We didn't believe in a lot of, I would say like more normative holidays. We saw them as like pagan. And, you know, so as a young person, I had a lot of altered state experiences, oracular experiences that I just could not understand. Mm-hmm. And I didn't have the frameworks to really make sense of them. And so that was really challenging. And then also not seeing people like myself, and whenever there was someone like myself, feeling like it was demonized or it was scary to be someone like myself. Yeah. That I think was like a big challenge, was that anytime I ever heard about a queer person or even about a witch too, like these were just things that were not seen as okay. Mm-hmm. And then on top of that, like another layer to this is that, you know, I grew up knowing that I was Mexican. I grew up knowing that my family was from Zacatecas and Jalisco. But I did not grow up knowing that I am connected to a deep indigenous lineage. And it was only as a result of my ancestors coming to me in dreams, coming to me in different moments of spontaneous divinatory awareness. That's the only way that I was actually able to reconnect with my indigenous ancestry, because my parents, because of colonization, they just didn't want to talk about it. It wasn't something that they felt comfortable talking about, or maybe they didn't feel safe talking about it. Mm-hmm. And even the first time that I share with my father about my own gifts, my own abilities, the first thing he said was like, oh wow, your grandfather used to do that stuff, and we stopped doing that when we moved into the village, because my dad came from a really rural area and moved into like a pretty rural town, but it was more of a Catholic town. And so there was like a shedding of that indigenous identity. And then of course, you know, they became Jehovah's Witnesses at some point, so that was like another layering too. And so I would say like there's so much that I've had to like unlearn and rediscover and kind of reclaim for myself as a result of this. And, you know, one thing that I feel connects to all of this is I grew up hearing the phrase a lot, no soy de aquí ni de allá, right? Like, I'm not from here and I'm not from there. And I've had to really transform that saying and saying, yo soy de aquí y de allá. I'm from here and I'm from there. I'm from everywhere. And that is something that I've actually learned from my indigenous ancestors and community, the Viraritari people, because they have that as a saying of like, we exist within certain lands. There are certain lands that are sacred to us. And also we exist everywhere. We exist across time and space. And I think it also really speaks to the way that indigenous people are many times relegated to history. And yet we are still here and we're still making culture and we're still impacting community. And I think that also really speaks to that legacy that's still very much alive within a lot of Mexican communities, but maybe not being labeled that way or not being seen in that way.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I just got like some serious chills when you said, soy de aquí, the E de allá, right? Like that I'm from here and there. And there's like, I totally identify with that. I think that a lot of us, especially us mixed kiddos, really identify with the feeling of like not really fitting in anywhere. And it's just like a very distinct energetic body of pain, perhaps, that we can name and empathize with everyone's distinct identities that they walk. It's really interesting too. I had a similar experience with my dad. He came down and I was fooling around with my first tarot deck, and he picked it up. I was thinking I was gonna get in real trouble because we're Mormons. And he started reading my cards for me and then told me.
Oh,
that.
Wow.
I was like, oh my gosh, like what? This whole thing just blew my mind wide open, right? And then you kind of, so you're saying this, and I'm assuming that tarot wasn't really present throughout your childhood. Is that right?
Wow. No. Those were, yeah, things of the devil, you know, like you did not. Yeah. So I also like didn't grow up watching like horror movies. I didn't grow up watching like witchy movies. There was so much that like I was told was just like not something we were supposed to connect with.
Wow. So like, I mean, in what I would grow up with, we had a lot of the superstitious. I would say my dad's quite superstitious, but it wasn't like we were wearing, you know, like the mal ojo or anything like that, the evil eye bracelets. We didn't have a lot of those talismans that sometimes you see, but we did have a lot of superstition around not using things like Ouija boards or other channeling type tools. Mormons have this lore around not being in bodies of water because supposedly it's ruled by malevolent spirits and things like that. So I always find that really interesting. Like we have our own series of superstitions within Mormonism, but then it kind of melds when you get into the Mexican American and the Latino American communities, you know. Did you come up with any of those tales? Did you come up with any like talismans or anything like
that? Yeah, you know, there's so many ways that I feel like those indigenous roots like did find their way into our communities. I, you know, would go to see a lot of women in our community growing up who were healers, who worked with hierbas and plants and who would give massages or sometimes like do like mini limpias or exorcisms, I feel, and would not call it those things, but it was very much accepted in my community to do that you would go see these mostly women who were doing these types of practices that I feel like my family still connected with, even though, you know, on the other side, they were telling me that other types of practices were evil or bad. These somehow still like made it into our culture and community. And there were like, you know, some specific things that I learned growing up that I feel like are connected to superstition. So I grew up, you know, really believing that like things could have spirits attached to them. So, for example, like it was kind of frowned upon if you shopped at thrift stores because you never knew like where things came from, even though I think that's like a form of classism in a way. And also I was really told to be guarded against certain types of media, certain types of even information. Like I grew up in a community that was really anti-higher education. And when I got accepted, I was the first in my family to be accepted into a four-year university. I was not met with like, you know, they were like happy, but they were also like, are you sure you want to do that? You're going to get led astray. And in all honesty, I was led astray by my university education. And it was what really opened my eyes to come to make sense of like how limiting my upbringing had been in terms of understanding history and culture. And so it really opened my eyes to other ways of thinking and understanding. And also I grew up, you know, as a Jehovah's Witness, really with this sense that the world was dangerous and that I needed to stay away as much as possible. I think, you know, especially you being Mormon, like I'm sure you can relate to that, where it's like we have our little cult, our little community, and we don't talk to anyone else. Or if we do, it's just like very superficial. You never become close to anyone. And that also, you know, really led to a very insular community that I grew up in. And so that to me is also superstition in a way. It's a way of like making stories or narratives about other people.
It, totally. Yeah. I'm not Mormon anymore, but we definitely had those phrases. That there's one in particular that was be in the world, but not of the world. You know, yes. You can navigate through it, but carefully, because the devil is everywhere.
And I was assuming you weren't Mormon now.
It definitely informs the way that I walk through the world now. Interesting to hold all of those threads. So how, when you're expressing yourself through your art, how do you bring all these threads together, right? Do you use like tarot iconography or archetype in your art or in your activism work? Or how do you incorporate all these things together? All these threads of who you are?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I feel like I, you know, don't always include all of myself. I think sometimes art can be like a refuge to really allow me to explore different aspects or parts of myself that maybe my other fields don't let me. Mm-hmm. Art is also a place where I can really process emotion, process, you know, thoughts, and also feel possibility where maybe I don't feel that possibility in other spaces. For example, like I've done a lot of like community organizing and workshops and public events. And a lot of them have been practices that like I could not do as a therapist, for example. Like I can't, you know, be so open about my, you know, I can't, like I am, you know, as a practicing therapist, I do talk a lot about like magic and witchcraft. And I think the clients that come see me now that I have a private practice, mm-hmm. they get it, you know, so it, I can be more of myself. But I think for a long time, I was working within agencies or nonprofits. And so I really felt like I had to compartmentalize different parts of myself. And so, you know, another way that I bring in those different threads into my art practice is that I work a lot with divination mm-hmm. and with ancestral communion in my artwork. I've received a lot of information from ancestors in terms of projects I need to work on, people I need to connect with. And I also feel like they've done their own work in like bringing people towards me or having people dream about, you know, projects that we're meant to work on. And so there is a way that I feel like my art practice is deeply connected to spiritual consciousness and that like other people are resonating with it. And I exist pretty prolifically on the internet and through media. And I think that's also a way that as a mutant, I'm trying to reach out and connect with other people who need to hear this message. And I think that does connect with my Jehovah's Witness background. Is like one of the main kind of tenets of Jehovah's Witnesses is like, we have the good news and we're trying to share it. We're trying to bring you into, you know, paradise on earth. And I definitely still feel that within me where I like, I'm trying to create a narrative that is inclusive and brings in different types of people that maybe don't feel like they belong within normative church structures. And so I definitely see myself being in that role. My soul card in the tarot is the Hierophant. Mm-hmm. And so I feel very much like, you know, invited into that role of being a conduit, a channel for the divine, and also really naming what practices and customs and rituals are of our people. And, you know, and also really naming that one of the ethos that I have in my, like, you know, non-linear, you know, nomadic, expansive church is that I really trust people's intuition and want to guide people towards their own intuition. I feel like that's where all the magic is. It's not about me telling people what to believe or who they are. It's really about people tapping into their own agency, their own power, their own intuition. That to me is where all the magic is.
You know, you're talking about like working with your ancestors, working with plant and animal spirits and things like that. Would you say that you are pretty, do you have a ritual around that? Or do you keep it pretty open? Like you, at least for me, I think they get dropped into my mind or my hearing or however I'm perceiving. And I've gotten quite good at recognizing that that's my intuition or my ancestors or whoever's speaking, right? Would you say the same, or do you approach in a more ritualistic way?
I would say both. I have definitely had a lot of moments of what I call spontaneous divination, where I'm just washing the dishes, I'm on a walk, you know, and all of a sudden I'm like receiving a download from mm-hmm. an ancestor, from a plant nearby. And those are moments where, yeah, I can really get a sense of like, this is a voice that is coming to me. This is a being that's coming to me, that's a visiting. And at the same time, I also do have ritualized practices whenever I'm wanting to evoke that or invoke that. I do have ways that I connect ritualistically to bring about these channelings, these messages, these communions. I definitely have practices that I do, but I feel like it is kind of a balance between both, definitely.
For sure. Would you say that there's in a book I have, and I'm struggling to remember the name of it now, but there's a book in about like ancestor works in which they call non-blood related ancestors, they call them affinity ancestors. Is there a particular archetype, deity, or ancestor that you go to?
Yes, I do have some personal ancestors that I've built long-term relationships with. And I also would say that I'm really expansive when I feel, the word ancestor coming in, because I've had all sorts of beings come to me in both spontaneous and ritualized forms of practice. And I really do feel like ancestors can be such a challenging word for people, especially with colonization and so many disrupted, lineages because of colonization. And so I really also lean into imagination and play and creativity when doing ancestor work. I really am inspired by the Afro-futurist and indigenous futurist movements of allowing ourselves to imagine the ancestors that we need. And I'm definitely someone who sees our ancestors being blood and also affinity too, and spiritual. Like, I think queer and trans people are connected to a deep lineage of queer and trans ancestors that maybe they might not be blood related to, but we're a part of a certain vibration, a certain frequency, a certain see. And in the same way, I see artists that way too. I think artists are a certain type of person, just like seers, visionaries, people who do oracular practices. Those are all also deeply connected to affinity communities that have done these types of practices globally as well. And, I think one thing I can think about, for example, growing up, I used to be really fascinated by Walter Mercado. I don't know if you know Walter Mercado.
Yes. So speak a little bit more about Walter Mercado. He's like an icon. But yes, go ahead. Take it away.
Well, my parents used to not let us watch Walter Mercado, but that was like also like what made it even more exciting was just seeing this person who is, really channeling a sacred guide and was also being really gender expansive, really letting themselves feel the fantasy of being in that role. It was just something that to me was so exciting. And, but also it was very quickly said to me that it was not something I should be interested in, not something I should want to know more about. And so of course I would like in secret, like watch some of his videos and, really try to understand astrology through the lens that he was sharing it in. And it to me is one of those roots where, you plant that seed and it's so hard to not let it germinate and grow, especially when people are feeding it with fear or with, trying to keep you away, especially as like a young queer person, not being able to see representation and finally seeing someone like, oh my gosh, like you resonate with you in some way. Like that was so impactful as a young person.
Yeah, I think that what I remember Walter Mercado being, and for those who don't know who he is, they are a mystic and astrologer that would show up on they had a TV show and would be in kind of like the commercial breaks, and they would spend a few minutes saying like, okay, so Gemini, here's your horoscope of the day, etc. And my parents didn't really subscribe to a whole, at least not visually, they weren't outwardly subscribing to astrology and fortune telling or anything of the sort. But no matter what, when Walter Mercado was on the TV, we would be pausing and listening to what they had to say. And it was so affirming. And there was no like explaining of who they were being or what the medicine was that they were delivering, whatever. It was just that they were. And I was so impacted by them and what they did. I'm sure you could probably say the same, but
that's so interesting that your family would watch their channelings, even though, as you said, they didn't really, speak about astrology outside of it, but it was just something that it was so mesmerizing. I feel like there was even times where I feel like because it would come on like during the news or during different shows where I feel like parents were maybe too lazy to turn off the TV and they were just like, let's just let this keep going. And there were a few times that I snuck, views with my parents but it was something that I think was so moving that people almost forgot that they weren't supposed to like a gender expansive person or that they weren't supposed to be into astrology. But here we are,
Yeah. And it wasn't like a conversation piece. It was just a non-issue that was Walter Mercado and you don't question them. So it was, and they're like decked out in gold capes and all of this. It was just just another example of glamour magic, which I want to, if we have a few more minutes, I would love to talk to you about glamour magic and if you use that in your channeling, or how you play with presentation, or do you play with presentation?
Yeah, I definitely do. I feel like there is so much magic in the way that we show up and present ourselves. I've definitely been inspired by people like Walter Mercado. I feel like a couple of other, types or, people who inspired me growing up. I, grew up in Southern California, and in Southern California, there was a big like cholex like culture. Yeah. And that had its own like aesthetic and words and like community and rules. And in a similar way, I also grew up around ravers and groovers and rebels. And these were all like different Latinx subcultures that identified with different music or different like aesthetics. And there was definitely a way that you could like read what someone was into based on like how they were presenting themselves. Yeah. And in a similar way, I feel like that's such a powerful way of communicating and letting people know like, hey, you're safe here, or you can feel free to experiment here. You can feel free to show up in a way that feels good for you here. Mm-hmm. An artist that I feel I've been really inspired by, her name is Guadalupe Rosales, and she has an amazing archive on Instagram under the name of Veteranas y Rucas, and also Map Points. And it really speaks to this like big history that hasn't really been documented or archived or talked about much, as important and impactful as it's been on so many young people. And so those are also things that I feel like really are in my subconscious too, of like, there's a way that like we really do communicate who we are and what we want to envision in the world by how we show up and how we present ourselves. And so that's definitely been something that's been really important for me since I was really young. I feel really knowing that there are signifiers that we really use. Mm-hmm. And I think that's also something that has like been challenging too, is like not seeing yourself or having to like piece together like what you feel like you maybe how you want to be seen or present. But it's also, I think the magic and the medicine of fashion and glamour is that it is an experiment. It is something we get to play with. It is something that we get to see how we impact others when we try things on, or how we feel when we try things on.
Absolutely. Like, I mean, and we talk so much about like fitting into a box or fitting into perhaps like a style or a trend. But when I'm thinking specifically about like the pachucos or the zoot suit and the rebellion that that was kind of wrapped up in that, right? And so for me, a lot of those times, especially now as an adult, like I'm kind of growing into like, I am the archetype. There is nobody like me, and I get to play with taking up space in that way, especially growing up in an environment that was very conservative and very white. So
I love that. I love that so much. I am the archetype. Yes, that is so good.
I love to invite people to step into that whenever they can with glamour, but with also with like divining in whatever kind of corner or flavor that you take on in the divination space, Okay, Edgar, thank you so much for this fantastic conversation. I want to wrap this up with one last question. What are you in search of right now in your life?
Yeah. I feel like the first word that comes to mind is more stability. In the last like 11 years, I've moved maybe like 8 to 9 times or something ridiculous. And I'm actually moving at the end of this month again. And so I feel like I'm definitely wanting a little bit more stability. I have been for a long time in a place where I've just like been wanting to move and explore and connect with different communities. And I definitely want to keep doing that. I want to keep growing and expanding my art. I want to keep expanding my presence and expanding what communities I connect with. And at the same time, I'm really feeling called to having more stability at home and being able to really build something that I can move from. And, I definitely have dreams of like buying a home at some point. Who knows if that will will ever happen, but I have that dream and vision now. And I definitely, as I said earlier, being in a place of transition and change, I'm also really looking to really step into my fullness, to really step into the fullness of my practices and to really define them and be clear and to really invite in the people that are needing to connect with my practices, to really connect with me. I think those are all things that I'm wanting to really focus on in the next few months and years.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like a very Two of Pentacles moment, Two of Coins moment.
Definitely.
Wow. Thank you so much, Edgar, again, for sitting and chatting with me today. It was a pleasure to get to know you.
Thank you. Yeah, such a gift to connect with you and your communities. Thank you so much for inviting me. This has been such a pleasure to connect with another person who, you know, as you said, we share similar backgrounds in different ways, and also that we're taking those threads and like creating something from them too. And I'm definitely going to sit with I am an archetype and really like allow that to energize me, because it feels so energizing to even just say it. I'm like, oh, what does that mean? It feels so exciting.
Oh, thank you so much. We will talk with you later.
Yeah.
In Search of Tarot is independently written, recorded, edited, and transcribed by Nick Kepley and Angie Miller. You can follow Angie on Instagram at birdgirl_, that's birdgerhl_, and you can follow me, Nick, on Instagram at In Search of Tarot. Have a question or a comment? Email us at isotpod@gmail.com. We also invite you to leave us a rating and review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts.